Hi, you're listening to SubDoc,
a show where we talk to interesting people, filmmakers, comedians that have strong opinions about their favorite docs. Hi, I'm Paco Romain.
And I'm George Chen.
And today we talk about the Up series.
Not to be confused with the Up Pixar movies, no. Which I made that mistake before. I'm like, when are these council estates going to start floating away in the sky with balloons? We're going to be talking about this series. It starts in 1964. We're going to talk about it with actor-comedian Josh Fadem.
You do like true crime, though. We were talking about how you interested in the Whitey... Did you see the Whitey Bulger?
Yeah.
I haven't seen that
it's
one
great.
Yet.
I every Joe Berlinger documentary I've seen is great.
Mm-hmm.
He made all the Paradise Lost films. He made the Whitey one. He made Brothers Keeper. Well, he made it with his partner, Bruce Stanofsky, who just passed away last year.
Those, by the way, Brothers Keeper is probably... I attribute that documentary as the documentary that got me into documentaries.
Oh, yeah?
Brothers Keeper, yeah. I love that documentary so much. It wasn't the first one that I ever saw, but it was the one that I was moved. I was moved so much by that documentary. I was like, I want more.
What was it? What were the parts that like really moved you? Or what was the thing that was sort of...
Just, it was so haunting, and just the trial part.
Yeah.
I mean, with him on... When they put the guy on the stand.
The one who keeps shaking.
Yeah.
Lyman? Lyman. Lyman was his name.
Yeah. It's so haunting.
Yeah,
so
you're
well
just...
Done.
And you realize just like, man, what has happened to this guy? You know, or how did he? He's so scared of people, and that he's like a little animal, just like popping his head out behind the cardboard cover or whatever.
I actually talked to someone the other day at a party who's like a journalist who thinks that he's very critical of that whole series because he thinks
of Bruce and Joe Berlinger,
of specifically the West Memphis Three stuff,
the Paradise Lost.
Yeah, because he thinks that they're guilty and that they've gotten exonerated through this.
Really.
Process or I don't know if I don't know enough about it. I haven't seen all of them.
Well, after watching those three and after watching West of Memphis, which are all kind of funded by their friends or whatever, it's really just like there's no way that you could think that they're guilty.
I agree.
Yeah.
You know, but then again, maybe I'm a victim of propaganda.
This guy's from New Zealand, and I just met him, and he might be listening to this because I told him about the podcast.
What's up, guy? You're wrong.
Listen, New Zealand.
Tweet at us. Tweet us.
What's up, New Zealand? You're wrong. Maybe he doesn't like Peter Jackson because Peter Jackson is one of the West Memphis Three's biggest champions.
Champions, eh? Yeah, I don't know. Paradise Lost is one of my favorite series of documentaries as well. Not even because of the exoneration or whatever, just because it's so compelling. It's so fucking compelling.
Well, that's it. Those documentaries, they're like almost like theater or like the way that they, Shakespeare, the way that they unfold the story. You know, and I've heard Joe Berlinger say in interviews that he's definitely like, you know, he likes to tell a story in the way that a narrative is being told, you know, and he's going to manipulate the audience. You're going to be like, ooh, you know.
Yeah.
Part two is like this, you know, whodunit, you know, where you're like, it's Byers, look at Byers. Oh, he did it, you know, and he's putting on such a show.
Yeah, taking his teeth out.
Yeah, that's such a great scene.
This makes me
wonder, like, what if there had just been, like, a murder during the 7-Up series? Like Neil's actually a killer.
That's what actually got me into watching the 7-Up. Or into Paradise Lost, because I burned through all the 7-Ups, and I was like, it's done? Well, actually, you know what happened was, I watched, well, if you wanted to back up, we were talking about credits.
Mm-hmm.
I did an episode of Better Call Saul, and I hadn't seen Breaking Bad when I did it.
Oh, really?
Wow. You know?
Wow.
And of course, you know, when I did it, everyone was talking about, they were like, because they hadn't aired yet. And they were like, well, we're doing Breaking Bad. We're doing Breaking Bad. And I was like, you know, I better go watch Breaking Bad.
Yeah.
And then so I went and I just decided, like, I know this. Everyone's talked about it. I just don't, like, have TV or Netflix. So I went and I used my mom's Netflix account and just, oh, I went to Cinephile also and just grabbed whatever I could and burned through all Breaking Bad. And then it was like, oh, I can sit and watch a TV show. But then I was like, well, maybe instead of watching a TV show, I should watch something else that's a series. Oh, you know, now I'm in series watching mode. I should watch all the Up series, you know. And then I watched like all the Up series. And then I was like, I don't want it to be done. Well, what's another documentary series? I don't want to watch another TV show. And so then I went and watched the Paradise Lost trilogy.
Mm-hmm.
And so then it became a more addiction. Now I got to watch more true crime stuff.
Yeah.
And then Serial was happening around that time too.
Uh-oh.
And then I went... Brothers Keeper. I went House of Suh. I went The Imposter. Yeah. I went
sing
name
it,
him again.
Sing it, girl.
Sing it. What's that one?
No, I was
sing it, girl. I went The Imposter. I went into the abyss. I went.
Oh, the abyss is a no. Is that a different one?
That's the James Cameron movie. Yeah, into the abyss is the
Mary Elizabeth Mastriano.
Mastrantoni. Mary Elizabeth Mastrantonio.
So when you were working at a video store, was not when you started getting super into documentaries, or that was?
No, I mean, I've always just kind of jumped. There's a beautiful piece of paper just fluttering in the wind right
it's
there.
It's the
by
most
the way.
Beautiful thing I've
that
ever
That is
filmed.
The most beautiful thing that the listeners won't see. It's still hopping in the air. Wow, San Francisco.
Yeah,
magical. Do come if you, but don't drive. By the way, driving in San Francisco, you know, I don't know. Does San Francisco have a worse rep for how it's the worst place to drive? Because I
pretty bad.
Have been miserable. I was miserable and having panic attacks. Like, it's like these people.
Game.
It's a video game. Yeah. And the people don't have brains. They just will walk straight toward your car.
Yeah.
Or, and another car is like, we're coming straight toward your car.
Everyone
too.
In this town has multiple PhDs, but they don't know how to cross a street.
It's the scariest place. You know, I'm like darting my head left, right, up, down. No,
not only that, but we have the slowest jaywalkers as well. Not only do they jaywalk, but they take their fucking time.
They also just appear.
Yeah, they do just appear.
Yeah. Anyway.
So let me
ask
you quickly.
What are we talking about? Video store. Oh, I didn't watch a ton. I mean, I watched some. You know, you watch whatever's new or whatever you want or something like that. But I'm actually... I feel like I have knocked out the true crime documentary genre, like, all last year. Like, there's maybe three that are the big ones that I still haven't said. I didn't do Dear Zachary, but my girlfriend watched it and told me everything about it. Now I'm like, oh, that one sounds too intense for me.
You'll cry.
Yeah. And then I didn't do Bus 174, is it? 147? Yeah. And I didn't finish Into the Abyss. I got to do that. But for the most part, I think I've seen – I haven't seen Incident at Oglala, which is directed by Michael Apted.
Yeah. I haven't seen that one either.
Actually. Yeah.
But those are all remarkably good documentaries. I do want to ask, so let's get back quickly to Better Call Saul.
Oh, yeah.
You auditioned for that part.
Yeah.
You were the cameraman, as I remember.
Yeah, on an episode where he's like kind of doing a little commercial or whatever.
He's putting up the billboard.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you auditioned for that and you got to share a scene with Bob Odenkirk, which is ridiculous.
Yeah.
That's so incredible.
Yeah.
How was it? Did you love it?
It was the best.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know what more could you ask for as an actor comedian type?
Yeah. Was it a 1 day shoot?
Maybe you could ask for rent to pay.
Yeah.
On a regular basis. But aside from that, what could you? Was it 1 day? It was the meat of it was shot in 1 day, and then there were little pickups for another day, and then they did a bunch of stuff without me on like a stage and stuff like that.
Oh, gotcha.
Yeah, yeah.
And Vince, did you meet the Gill?
No, I didn't. But I did. They weren't there. They were shooting. But I did actually meet Peter Gould.
Nice.
Like I met him just socially like 2 weeks ago. He came up to me and said, "I'm Peter Gould, and you're on Better Call Saul." And I was like,
no,
"Whoa, wow, cool!"
Oh, that's
and
cool.
And he was real cool.
That's fantastic.
He was nice. Can you believe it? Talking about someone who's famous, and can you believe I'm saying that they're nice?
Yeah.
Thank God, listeners. Oh, thank God. You know what? Wait, was he nice? He was. Oh, wow. That sounds great.
That sounds amazing. So we have like this like. Dynamic of a switch universe where San Francisco is becoming a bunch of assholes and LA's full of like nice celebrities.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing. I was making fun of the thing of like you ever hear anyone talking about like I worked with so and so, I met so and so, or they name drop, and then they go, and he was so nice, just the greatest.
Tom Hanks, just
Tom
a
Hanks,
lovely man,
so great. Just who else we got? Oh, Rachel McAdams, so great. Gosling, great.
Yeah.
Oh, Michael Pitt from Murder by Numbers with Ryan Gosling, so great. Sandy Bullock was great. Big fat guy who played the big fat kid in The Blind Side, so great. That country singer in The Blind Side, great. Oh, the director of The Blind Side, John Lee Hancock, who made that other piece of shit Disney movie, so great.
He's a
great guy. They're all so great.
Well, like, who wants to go to a job with someone who's being an active dick anyway, whatever your job is, whether it's, like, famous people or not?
That is true.
It's like, oh, that is a miserable mailroom person.
That is true.
Well, yeah. my bigger point is that they're probably all dicks. They're all dicks. And the people who are calling them nice are dicks, including me. I'm a fucking dick.
Trying to climb that ladder
on
a podcast in San Francisco.
Yeah.
They're definitely listening to this. All of Hollywood is listening to this podcast for sure.
I'm going
to
broadcast it to them.
Yeah, put it on the dick station.
Dicks.
So then...
But by the way, I do think there's lots of nice people in Los Angeles.
When did you first sit down and watch the 7 series, the Up series?
Well, yeah, as I was saying, I just caught your cough. As I was saying, I bet they love the coughs here, the listeners, huh? Nice menorah mug.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Are you Jewish?
I didn't typecast. Half.
Half Jewish. Half Paco, half Jewish.
Yeah.
What was I talking? What were we talking? Oh, I watched the Up series after I watched all of Breaking Bad because I was like, oh, because normally I'm like, I don't watch TV because I can't watch a TV show. It takes too long and it's too much. And then I'm like, I like movies. You get a movie, you get out. And then once I watched a TV show, Breaking Bad, then I was like, oh, I can watch a TV show. I can watch, you know, a series. Easy. And then I started trying to watch other little things that are like, I want more serialized things. And then I was like, I've always been meaning to watch the Up series, and I just never did. And then I just, even like I first heard of it when the one came out in like 1999. I think it was 42 Up. Mm-hmm. And because that was like a big year for movies in 1999. Like everyone who was still alive seemed to put out a movie that year. Everyone who was the big famous filmmaker still. It was like the current generation of the great modern guys right now, and then the previous generation who wasn't dead yet. You know?
Kubrick, was that 99?
Kubrick, no, yeah. You had Kubrick, Scorsese, you know, made Bringing Out the Dead, you know. You had a new Star Wars. Yeah. You know. But it was actually, I revisited it recently, and I hated it when I saw it, but... it's not bad.
Bringing Out the Dead.
Yeah, it's Nick not bad. Yeah. It's kind of one of those little tucked away Scorsese's, you know. He wasn't, I feel like he was slumming it a little bit because he hadn't had like a huge hit in a while.
Right.
You know, maybe Casino was like, I don't know, was Casino even a hit? I don't know. People liked it,
yeah.
But.
I'm an After Hours guy.
After Hours is I would say Bringing Out the Dead is kind of like, you could tuck it in there with After Hours. I like After Hours more, but it's kind of
it's
like,
not a comedy per se. No, it's
Bring
Out
it's the got
Dead.
Some weird
dark
surreal moments. Yeah,
with,
dark comedy.
With Nick Cage?
The hanging out the window stuff. They hang the drug dealer out the window. You know, John Goodman's funny in it.
He's in. Right.
Tom Sizemore's funny in it.
And that was before Streets of New York.
Gangs of New York. Yeah,
Gangs of New York.
Then he kind of started trying to get back into being a prestige guy.
Yeah. Epics, doing the epic.
Yeah, and it went his. It was pre DiCaprio era. You know, once DiCaprio was in his movies, he had DiCaprio on Stronghold. He became like Howard Hawks type director, where he just going to make these type of big movies.
Well, he's doing a lot of documentaries too, right? Isn't he?
Yeah, he does do a lot of documentaries,
like for PBS and stuff. Now
he likes his music.
The Fran Lebowitz, he's like, he's my fourth Rolling Stone documentary.
I enjoy
it's a good,
the Rolling Stones.
Good Marty.
Have you heard of this band? They're called the Rolling Stones. They're very good. They're very good. Very good.
I love Rolling Stones.
There's Mick and Keith and the late Brian. May he rest in peace.
So, let's talk about 7 Up.
Yeah,
7 Up. Well, let's focus on what we meant to talk about.
Did you start on Netflix with all of these?
No, I did start. I did do them on Netflix, I think. And then maybe, I don't know if there is there. I guess they're all on Netflix. They are all on Netflix except for when I was watching them, the most recent. So I went and I grabbed that from Cinefile.
Right, yeah.
And, so yeah, I started with 7 Up. It was real easy to watch. If you're listening at home, you think you're intimidated by. If you're intimidated by a series, that's too many. You know, the first one is 30 minutes, and these kids are cute and they're funny, and it's from the 60s, and you see them, and it's just you burn right through it. It's the easiest, most charming thing to watch.
Yeah,
would you agree?
I would agree. I mean, I had trouble kind of telling them apart at that point because it's just like, okay,
you don't know them yet.
There's two Northerners. They're from like Liverpool, and they have like a little bit of that Liverpool accent.
Yeah.
Who stands out to me is Tony in the first
one. Of course.
He's Tony is just such a little monkey of like excitement.
Yeah. Yeah.
And he's kind of the opener for, he stays the opener for like several movies in the series, like because he's so charismatic.
Yeah.
What's interesting about, I guess what we're today, we'll just talk about like the first three or four.
Yeah, yeah.
And then maybe I'll come back and we'll
finish
we'll
see.
But what's interesting about Tony, well, it's interesting about all of them that I notice is that they are very much, the whole theme is like, show me the man at 7 and I will show you the man or something that. Show me the boy at 7 and I will show you the man. And, you know, but what's also interesting to me is that they're all very 7-year-old-y and like kind of, I'm a kid repeating what I heard and this and that. And then when they get to 14, they're all extremely bashful and they're all like, they're just the quintessential, like, oh, I don't want to do this. And then when they get to 21, a lot of them are back to how they were at 7.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, like, that's Tony, Tony's like, I want to be a jockey. I want to be a jockey. And then when he's 14, he's serious, and they're like, what do you think, Tony? And he's like, I don't know.
I don't know.
Do you have a girlfriend? No. Do you want a girlfriend? No, I don't want one. You know, and then, but then when he's back to 21, he's given up being a jockey because he tried. I tried, I failed, and now I'm back to being this guy. Mom, dad, dog, prices, dog, knowledge streets.
The knowledge, yeah, yeah. I love that one. The
Who's
knowledge.
Who's doing the knowledge?
The knowledge. And he's like,
just now
like,
a GPS. You don't need the knowledge.
The girls ever make fun of you because of your size. And he's like, no, I just say, I can grow big, but you always would be ugly. And then I say, I point at their tits.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. He's like, he goes, what does he say? He goes, my real secret is I want to see my baby boy. I'll see my baby boy. Now make me happy. I'll see my baby boy. And then what's the other one? Oh, you know, we're talking about girls. He goes,
three Fs.
You know, find them.
Three Fs.
Find them, feed them, forget them. The four Fs. Find them, feed them, forget them. The fourth one, I'll leave it to your discretion.
Yeah.
And he goes, I did the three Fs, but I couldn't forget her.
That's, yeah, he's pretty incredible. And so his desire to be a jockey,
yeah,
doesn't happen.
Yeah, by 21, which by the way, I like to think, I don't know if you guys agree, that even talking about it, it's still fun to watch. It's fun to watch these people's stories.
Mm-hmm.
That's something I think that it's like, you know, in the later movies, he'll talk about. Because the later movies, spoiler, they start to make reference to they make a lot of reference to that their life has been altered by these movies.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, but some of it he'll talk about like how people have been inspired by him or whatever. And I was thinking about it because I looked at a couple of clips this morning again, and I was like, I could see how seeing a personality like him could be kind of inspiring because he's so, you know, happy-go-lucky, and he just takes everything in stride, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there are ones by 28 and 35 and later where, you know, he's got some marriage troubles or whatever. But
yeah. Oh, yeah.
But I don't know. How far did you get?
I skipped 35 because I realized after watching, my other recommendation would be if you do just watch the 28 one on Netflix, the first half hour is 7 Up, and then a lot
at
that point.
You can skip it. You can skip the first half hour. It's just showing you. I mean, did you actually sit through it on the again or
no? I didn't. But I was going to say for someone who's like getting into it, there's so much recap that happens in the first couple ones that if you're watching them like cramming them the way I was trying to binge watch them, you just hit this repetition point, which is to the point where like. You know, like, what quote they're going to use. Because there's a limited number of quotes from back in 1964 when they started.
I think they had more. They just used the same ones for some reason.
Yeah, I mean, like, there must be, like, B-roll and stuff. I don't know why they don't bring those things out when they do them. Because it's just the same footage a lot of the time. But that being said, it's very interesting. I was going to say...
Strangely, the director who did the first one, Paul Almond, he also died about a month ago.
Oh, okay. Huh.
Yeah. He's, like, a Canadian director. And Michael Apted was like the researcher, and he helped find the kids, and he did like the interview questions and stuff.
Yeah,
and then he took it over.
And like it was created for television originally.
Yeah,
right? But like the more recent ones, have they had theatrical releases, or have they been kind of like?
I think they've all come out. No, they've all come out here.
Yeah.
Maybe they even play at film festivals, or maybe I don't know if they air for television there, but how it works. But yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, just a thought about the format like how now people do binge watching. So it's sort of a weird way to – you could just kind of jump cut in on some of these. But, I mean, you do get a lot of the flavor of their lives when you watch them all the way through.
I mean, you almost might want to do one a week.
Yeah, that might be the better way to pace it.
As opposed to
binge it.
I'm gonna sit and watch them all in a day because then you're just getting repetition after repetition.
Yeah.
And that's obviously not meant how they make it every seven years. It's not meant to be watched like that. And they made it predating home videos. So it's just like when we first sat down with, you know, we didn't. Michael Apted's funny because he's such a droll interviewer.
He's very droll.
He's also said, I've heard him because, you know, after I binged the whole series, I was obsessed, and I was, like, in love with these people, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, I got to know more, you know? And so I just started seeking Michael Apted interviews where he talks about it, you know? And he talks about his failings in the series and how he feels like he tried to, like, predict where they were going to go, you know?
Right.
And and he offended a lot of them, and it became all about like he kind of has to give them now. He kind of, in order to not lose them, he has to give them a little bit of like approval, you know, as if to say, is this okay that I'm showing this, you know, like because he's. A lot of them have threatened to walk and say, I'm not going to do this anymore. You
right.
know?
They have the power now. Yeah. It's been.
Yeah. Small. And but in a way that is not in a way that isn't like, well, I don't want to see that, you know, but just in a way that's like, I don't know. It's still it normally you would hear that about a movie and think, well, that sounds like it's going to be a shitty movie if you just got some subject dictating what's going to happen. But I think it's such It's all in the context of the whole thing. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And that makes it different, you know, because it's like I'm just as fascinated by the making of it as I am the movies themselves.
Yeah, I mean, well, there's a couple. I think one guy never comes back, which is Charlie.
Yeah,
Charles never comes back.
Yeah.
And it's funny because he ends up being a guy who makes documentaries for the BBC.
Yeah,
so it's like you'd think he'd be the one. Maybe it's on some level he's like. I've kind of been through that. I kind of know how the cards are played. I don't want to give them too much material to work with. But it's not like...
Well, it's just weird that he would go into that, and one of the greatest, in my opinion, and I would say Roger Ebert's, one of the greatest, like, mm-hmm. you know, contributions to the genre of documentary, mm-hmm. he's a part of it.
Yeah.
As a subject, and he won't participate. It's but that's what he decided to go into as a you know living. Mm-hmm. That's so strange, you know.
Strange.
I mean, but I think also he may. I'd like to think because I'm pro Michael Apted, he's probably just an asshole, and you know, and he's just like he's probably like a rich asshole or something like that. You
yeah,
know?
Could be. I mean, the other guy who doesn't participate a lot is one of the posh boys. Is John.
Jordan. John is he's the one who's a little bit of poison. Every year comes back, a little bit of poison. And he's the one who's like, as a kid, he goes, stop it at once!
Yeah.
Yeah.
Who's yelling at a kid, kid throws something, goes, stop it at once!
Yeah.
He's a rules guy. He's definitely a rules guy. He's a Thatcher guy.
And he wants to be a barrister, isn't he?
Yeah. Yeah, well, I'm going to be a barrister. Yeah. And he's the one who, what does he also say? He says, there's another good quote where he goes, I read the Financial Times and Observer.
Oh, I think, is that him?
I read about John Grisby. He goes, I look at the headlines and I read about them, about it.
I thought that was Andrew that read.
Andrew's the one, he's the one
he's
who.
He's a Steve Coogan looking guy.
He's kind of got the teeth and he's the one whose wife is like, he thought he was getting a Yorkshire Deb, but instead he got a haughty lass.
And it says here in my notes that Charles, Apted alleged that Charles has attempted to sue him when he refused to remove Charles's likeness from the archive.
Yeah, oh, yeah. Wow. See, asshole.
Yeah, yeah.
But also, I think...
He was seven. Like, his parent had to sign his release form the first time or something, so...
And he appeared all the way up as a... He was that little long-haired dirt boy. He was like a little stud, little long-haired stud, and a little. He looked like a little...
Oasis guy or
something. He looked like a little 2015 hipster, and I would say probably more 2004 hipster.
Yeah.
In 21.
21, yeah, he's in 21. After that, he drops out.
Yeah, and there's another one who drops out, and I won't.
Simon?
I won't, I guess, I don't know. I don't know if I should mention whether he comes back or not.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Sure, I think we should just presuppose that everyone's seen these.
Oh, yeah, no one's going to watch just for the recommendations, huh?
Yeah, no.
They're like, I'm going to sit and listen to these guys talk about these points and not. Yeah, well, then the guy, Peter, is the one. He goes away, and you're like, what happened to Peter? But here's the thing that I also heard in the universe. So Charles, I guess, probably they had a falling out, Charles and Michael Apted.
Probably.
And so, I know, I think they did. I think I read an interview that they had a falling out. And so he said, fuck this, I'm done. Peter, he stayed friends with Michael Apted. So Michael Apted kind of smears Charles a little. Well, he goes, Charles has refused to participate, or Charles will have no part in this documentary series. But he doesn't make any mention of Peter at all. Peter just is gone after 28.
Mm-hmm.
And then he comes back in 56. Mm-hmm. And you're like, what? And like, they didn't show clips of him. They didn't show it. They didn't say Peter has disappeared. You know, Peter wants no part. He just doesn't make mention of it, you know? And, but he comes back in 56.
With his band.
He goes, I want to promote my band. And he goes, I love The reason I'm doing it is because, well, I love Graham Parsons. and then also, but the thing that, like, when he's 20, it, what's funny is the way they shoot it, you know, you just, it's so interesting to see where he was at 28 and, like, see him now. Because
yeah.
And he's got a bookshelf behind him. There's, like, four books, like, History of Punk. And he's got an earring. And he just, he looks like a gray-haired former punk or something.
Right, yeah.
He looks kind of like a Brit Jim Jarmusch or something.
Yeah.
And,
his band, The Good Intentions.
The good, what are they called? The Good Intentions.
And he's not even the squatter.
No.
Yeah.
He's,
and, but that was his
squatter.
Buddy was the squatter.
Yeah,
yeah.
Yeah.
It was
Peter.
I would love to see them reunited. That's another thing. Every
Neil?
Time.
Neil's
the squatter. Yeah. But the other thing about Peter that I was going to say is he's the one. The reason he ducked out was because in 28 up, he got asked about the government. He's like, what's the most to... It's the, what does he say? I think I wrote it down. Something.
Oh, he said something anti-Thatcher. Is that what it
yeah,
was?
Yeah, he's like, you know, it's the most comical bloody show I've ever seen. Why? Uncaring bloody show we ever had. You know? He goes. He asked him a question about it, and he goes, why do you think? Why? It's the most uncaring bloody show we ever had. You know, and he's like, so cynical, and it's bastards, and the fascists, and whatever. And then I guess he got a ton of flack for that.
Yeah.
And they're like, "This, who's this shithead 28-year-old? And he said, I'm done. I don't need my quotes out of context
yeah.
or whatever.
Yeah.
It's weird because Bruce actually says he's a socialist, but he's like given, he's throughout the whole thing. But he's also like real Christian and real quiet and polite.
Right. So I was convinced that Bruce, he's not, but I was
gay.
Convinced he was gay.
Yeah, me too.
Of course.
I got that too.
Yeah.
You know.
Oh, of course.
Like he was like, it will come. I mean, I haven't found someone yet, but it will come.
Yeah.
It's a little ruddy,
I was waiting,
ruddy
I was,
cheeks.
I was waiting for someone to be gay. Then none
yeah.
of them were gay.
Yeah. Statistically, that seems off.
Yeah. Yeah, it seemed like one of them should be gay. I mean, maybe it's Neil. Maybe Neil's gay.
Yeah.
Neil's you know?
Yeah, Bruce wanted to be the missionary.
Bruce.
As a young child, I wanted to, he cared so
my
much
greatest
about
dream
poverty.
Would to be my, with my dad.
Did you guys think it was odd in the first one that so many of the kids were not all that racially motivated? I mean, they seem to have some more mature thoughts about racism
than their parents.
Yeah, I guess.
You mean, well, in the first one, a lot of them didn't even under like. There's the two that don't, Neil and Peter don't even understand the question.
Yeah,
they go. You know, colored people think of a purple person.
Yeah, yeah. But some of them were like, they're just like us.
They're just like us.
They're just like anyone.
Wasn't there one, though, that said something kind of awful where he thought, like...
There was one
I
that said...
Jackie said something kind of weird. It's like they would say something.
Oh, yeah,
something.
Yeah. I don't know. Oh, yeah, yeah. No, Susie. Susie was the one who... Okay, Susie is like a rich sheltered
yeah.
piece
yeah.
of shit. And then when she gets to...
she gets better.
When she gets to 28, you're like, oh, she's like... By the end, you're like, she's the sweetest.
Yeah,
she's,
yeah, totally.
She's a sweetheart.
Yeah, she
you love her.
A lot.
You know, and
she's
and
like
she's,
a bad girl.
She's
like
so unhappy
cigarettes.
Too.
Yeah.
She's smoking cigarettes, and there's that
my
scene.
My type.
Like, do you have a boyfriend? And she like rolls her eyes.
Yeah.
Or, you know, and she doesn't want to be there. And the dog is killing a rabbit in the background.
That's so good.
That's
yeah.
the and he's like, don't you want to save the rabbit? And she's like, bring it here.
She goes, what's the other one like?
Yeah, she totally rolls.
One of my other but Susie, what were we saying about Susie? I forgot. I think it's like 35 or 20. It's 28, I think. You know, and she's like cleaned up and nice, and like has on, has on like
she's
a sweater
a mom,
now.
Yeah.
She's a sweater mom, you know. And she
yeah.
and he goes, she just had a baby. Oh, they show her saying, "I don't think I'll have children. I don't want them." And then it cuts to her with like holding a baby, and she goes, "What happened?" She goes, "Suppose Rupert." And then her husband is this shy, like,
yeah. And they're like, so do you enjoy doing this? She's like, I suppose it's pointless and silly.
Yeah.
And he's like, well, why do you think that? My parents made me do it. She didn't want. She's like sitting in the grass. And
yeah.
Like,
yeah. Yeah, at 14, none of them want to be there.
That makes perfect sense.
Yeah.
Oh, Nicholas is the one.
He
doesn't want to be there in 14. He can't even look at the camera at 14.
When he's older,
yeah,
he doesn't want to be there. Yeah.
Oh, Nicholas?
Oh, at 14?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah,
like,
yeah,
just,
yeah, yeah. No, no.
Just...
I love him. He's the one. Nicholas is the one who, when I grow up, I want to find out about the moon and all this.
And all the moon.
All that.
Yeah.
And then at 14, and he goes, and he also goes, I don't answer questions like that when they ask him about, do you have a girlfriend?
Yeah.
I don't answer questions like that. And then at 14, they ask him that again. And he goes, do you have a girlfriend? He goes, he asked me that because I said I don't answer questions like that. And he says, yes. He goes, thought so. And then, and like, he doesn't want to answer the question. But yeah. Then at 21, He's like a stud.
Yeah. He's like a farm
hand. He's like the hunkiest study.
Yeah.
He's like, I'm fucking every day.
I've dipped my wick a few times.
Oh, I've seen it all.
Like, and then show me how this apparatus works, will you? Other co-ed girl.
And then
Oxford?
He turns out to be a nuclear physicist.
Yeah.
For Christ's
sake. He does find out about the moon. But the part he goes, the best answer would be to say, I don't answer questions like that, but... what do you want to know?
Yeah.
He
goes to America later.
Yeah, he lives in Wisconsin now.
Yeah.
And my friend Jim, Jim Healy, character actor, Pat Healy's brother, lives in Wisconsin and programs the movie theater there, like in a film festival there at the University of Wisconsin. And when the last one came out, you know, they did a screening of it, when I watched them all, I go, do you ever see Nicholas, you know, from the F series? And he says, he came to the screening, and he's a very nice guy, very interesting guy, but is very uncomfortable with the series.
Uh-huh.
Because it disrupts his life every 7 years, you know. He's not like someone who's wants to be in the spotlight or in that way.
Most nuclear physicists aren't out for spotlight. You know, like they're not exactly like big public speaking type folks.
Yeah. Though he does say in a later one, there's like a quote where he goes, you know, he's talking to Michael Apted. He goes, you know, I was hoping that I'd be more famous for doing science instead of this film, but it's not going to happen. You know?
So how old are these participants today?
The last one was 56 up. Yeah. So that was 2012, I guess.
59, yeah.
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 That's incredible. Yeah. Has there been an American equivalent?
I think they've tried, but no one knows. They've all failed. They've all probably fizzled out.
Yeah, all the 7-year-olds in there would be like, oh, I hate black people. And like they'd just be like racist.
One black guy in the British one, and that's another thing Michael Apted has talked about his regrets is that he didn't get more diversification race wise or gender wise. You know,
what's funny how like they talk a lot about a couple of them live in this part of East London, Bethnal Green, and how it's basically gets more diverse every time they show, like, well, the neighborhood's changing, ain't it? And it's just like, oh, it's a bunch. Yeah, it looks like there's just different people living here now. Uh-huh. And so that does get brought up in that capacity. But maybe if they'd started it like in the 70s, then there would be more diversity or something. I don't know if that when the immigration waves were happening.
Oh, right.
But that's one part of London that I do kind of. When I would go there, that's where my friends live, so I would stay near Bethnal Green, so I kind of know that area a little bit. And they talk, I mean, this is all about the sort of entrenched class system in England. A lot of what this is about, at least the premise of it when they started, it's about class, basically.
It evolves into being more about you know, their lives. And that's what I think when talking about like Tony being an inspiration, where it's kind of like, yeah, there are people, and they just keep going, and it's like a, you know, and that's what you do in life, you know.
And he owns that identity of being like an East Ender. That's like very core to his identity.
East Enders love their mum.
Yeah. And I read a description of this, which basically said like Neil ends up being the big disappointment, and Tony the big winner out of
That's a shitty description. Who made
that? Who wrote that?
I don't.
Some IMDb commenter.
Remember. It was on Rotten Tomatoes. No, I don't remember where I read it, but it basically was like you end up being surprised by the fact that Tony becomes the real success story, I guess.
I'd say Nicholas is the most successful in terms of...
I think Tony did well, you know, but I think it's more like... Because he was like a hard worker, but I wouldn't say... I wouldn't categorize it as, that one turned out to be a disappointment. Like, if anything, it's just more fascinating to see, like, this is someone's life and, you know, I don't know. I want to go like really chew out that comment or whoever the hell he is. Yeah. It's like, I don't think it's about that. I think it's about like, look, these are things that can happen in life.
Yeah. So,
and people are different. And, you know, like Neil, you know, who knows what Neil's upbringing was? Or, you know, he talks about how he had a really religious, they gave him religion, you know, and then maybe it didn't work or he got depressed, you know, and you could see Neil is this sprightly, skipping, cute Liverpoolian.
He's so cute.
He's so cute and happy, and he's got these teeth, and he's got little teeth, and you know, and he's like, he's one of these purple people. And he's like, I would like to, if I can't be, what does he say? Does he say he wants to be? I want to be an astronaut. If I can't be an astronaut, I want to drive a horse carriage.
Yeah,
and then by 14, he's quiet, and he's kind of, well, I don't know, I haven't thought about it. And then by 21, he's kind of squatting.
Yeah.
And he's like, I don't know how long I'll live, you know?
Yeah.
And by 28, he's straight up like homeless. Hitchhiking, homeless, yeah. You know?
And then he runs for office.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, I won't talk about some of what he's doing in some of the later ones yet. We'll talk about that next time.
That's right.
But his story is interesting.
Yeah.
You know? Because he's... You see him struggle, you know, and you're always rooting for him, you know. Like, he's actually one of the more emotional storylines in there, you know.
Yeah.
Like you really care about Neil. You really want to know what, like, Neil's up to.
Yeah. I was going to say, like, it almost feels like, yeah, like that comment about, like, there's winners and losers. I think this kind of goes against that ultimately.
It's not what the movies are about.
It ends up not being about, like, that. It's not, like, who makes the most money or who's the most happy or something.
Yeah.
It's,
he's, who won in life?
Yeah.
That's stupid.
He's definitely...
Fuck that guy.
And he's fascinating.
Let's find him.
Like, Neil is particular. I feel like I know a lot of Neils. Like, I feel like I know these guys that are, like, really intelligent and thought they could outthink the system, and then they just end up being like, well, I just don't fit into anything. And then because there's more of, like, a dole or a system, like a better welfare system over there, they can still survive in a way that I think in America that there's not the support structure for those people. And they end up being like the dudes on Telegraph or at People's Park that you see or on Hate Street, you know.
Yes.
It's a similar situation.
The wealth there, though, the wealthy kids were really wealthy.
Oh, yeah.
In the series. When, like, this is her home in Scotland.
But there's that's another thing where I don't want to spoil too hard some of the later stuff you find out about John.
Yeah, right.
You know, like, he's got some interesting twists in his life. And also, you think he's going to grow up to be a piece of shit because he's such a stuffy, snot-nosed, like, that doesn't really work, is it? What's the purpose? What is the purpose of this program?
Yeah.
To show, but
just
really
his
work.
Mouth is so punchable when he's a kid.
Yeah, you know, and when he's 21 and he's so smug. But, and then I think it's by... 40, he comes back.
Yeah.
He didn't do 35. He didn't do 28. He says, 21, I'm still the same. And then, like, he comes back in his 40s because he's doing this, like, amazing humanitarian work, you know? And then later on, even, you find out more stuff about what was going on in his childhood that completely recontextualizes what we've seen recapped 100 times, you know?
Yeah.
Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Byte Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, what's your secret? Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
So I want to know for you guys, who surprised you the most between 7 and, let's say, either the 28 or 35 series?
Who's, like, had the most surprising, like, twists?
For you, like, who changed the most and who you liked the most in that?
I was most worried for Neil. Like, I was worried that Neil wouldn't make it to the end of the series.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. That's how, I mean, I think that in terms of the twists, like, Susie's twist is pretty drastic.
Yeah.
She's such a little spoiled shit.
She is.
You know? And you're just...
Going to Paris.
And she's such a little get away from me at 14. And then even at 21, she has no love in her life. She has no love to give.
She's a bad girl at 21.
Yeah, she's got the jean jacket.
Look at his smile.
At 21, she dresses and looks like a bad girl, but she's still got that, like, entitled, over it, bored feel about her. And then at 28, she's like, I suppose Rupert.
Yeah.
You know?
I kind of felt like she had soulless eyes when she was a kid, too. Like, when she's sitting there in that dress, there wasn't much behind her.
Because you realize that she's just got this big house and this old man dad and probably no love, all these, you know, hunting dogs. And yeah. What is it in that she's in the ballet class? She's never seen a black person.
Yeah. Oh, that's right. Yeah, that was the line. She'd never seen
it. Was it something like that?
Yeah, I think it was something like that. Yeah,
not really. You know, do you want to know them? Not really. Or something like that.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, I mean, you're looking back, it strikes you as someone who's like, she just probably didn't have that much love or something like that.
Wasn't her dad always gone, too? Wasn't she one of the little girls, her dad was gone.
Maybe that's something later on we find out, like, that, you know, that she didn't have a very present parent or something like that.
Yeah. I get the feeling that it was a lot. It was pretty prevalent in most of these kids.
Jackie is one. You remember Jackie? She's real sprightly as a little girl. She's mm-hmm. She's kind of those three.
More the three class London girls. Yeah.
Yeah. She's kind of more, she's the most,
talkative.
Yeah. Yeah. And precocious also.
Yeah.
And then she's, then you also find out in later ones they talk about specific episodes, you know. Mm-hmm. She and Michael, I think more recent ones, they come to blows a little bit, you know. Jackie gets mad at Michael, and she was clearly mad at him in 21.
Yeah, she's like,
there's a scene in 21 which she references in a later where she puts her head down and stops talking, and you can see it in there. Doesn't cut to a close up, but like they're showing the three of them and she's just looking down, and that's because Michael asked her some condescending question.
Well, there's one point when he says, like, wouldn't you like to be rich, and they all go after him.
Right.
They're all just mm-hmm. like, fuck you.
Yeah.
Like, I don't have to be rich to have a good life.
Right.
Like, you can feel the class struggle in there.
Yeah.
Like,
even Michael is kind of like
backpedals a bit.
Yeah. No, he like put, you know, he condescends him a little at certain point.
Oh, I see. Yeah,
you know, and he talks about how he thinks that it was a mistake, and he tried to predict where they were going to go, and mm-hmm. that was wrong, and it made him come off bad, and
it's kind of because
he thought he was trying to set up. He thought Tony was going to be a loser, and he was trying to set up in an earlier movie that Tony wasn't going to make it, and Tony was going to be a fuck up.
Which do you remember? Which one?
And I don't know.
Well,
how,
when he's just working at the horse tracks, it's sort of like, I don't know where this is going.
He's
right?
Like a little,
I was worried
he's
about
like
him.
An English Mickey Rooney. Yeah. Like he's just like
exactly
when he was running in the 7-1. Like he's just like square. He's like this,
and he takes a spill, and then he just gets back up.
And my girlfriend calls me a monkey.
Oh, I love that. I wish that we knew what was going on with that little girl.
Oh,
you know,
with the big hair.
Yeah. And she was so cool, that little girl. And he goes, she's talking about what she does. She goes, sometimes I do this, and sometimes
I go to the pictures.
The pictures, and I go with him. And she goes, you don't. I do.
Yeah. I thought he was going to sock her in the
face. And he goes, and then he goes, I don't ever see you. Yeah. And you're like, oh, he's sweet.
Yeah.
He's so sweet.
He's just a little fire plug guy. Yeah.
But then but the way that he goes, I don't ever see you, you're like, oh, I feel bad. He doesn't see her. And she's like, I go to the movies with him.
Yeah.
You don't.
You
I
don't.
Do.
I also wanted to say something about like how the watching a bunch of these in a row, the theme music for how they ends makes everything seem ominous. It's like
dun, dun, dun.
I'll give you the man. Dun dun dun. Yeah.
That's like that weird news program,
yeah. Right? It's like that of Granada
the
TV 60s, thing.
Yeah. When there's the dun dun dun. Yeah. That's the news program. That scary music. But then there's also the swell.
Yeah.
That makes me cry every time. Where I'm like, oh, that swell. Here comes the. I can't remember how it goes, but you know, like when the show me the man.
Yeah.
Show me the boy at that's 7, and I will give you the man.
It's always like, is it Susie and swinging on a tire?
Yeah.
It's close with Susie swinging on a tire.
And then the ones who are orphans, orphans building a house.
Yeah.
And the what's his name?
It's Paul.
Paul the bricklayer.
Yeah,
bricklayer.
Yeah.
You know, I'm just a bricklayer. I don't know anything.
He enjoys it.
I'll just lock it. That he's building the house. That, I mean, what a gift to the filmmakers. Like,
yeah,
we got him building a house as a kid. He's building a house. It's a little like almost too good. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like they're just too lucky that they got that edit. You know?
Yeah.
But it's great. It's great because you're like, you know, here he is at 7, like trying to build a house. And then here he is literally building a house at 21.
Yeah.
You know?
And he's moving up the ladder as well. No pun intended. Like he's saying, like he's now the like whatever. He's second in charge of laying bricks.
Yeah.
And then he starts his own business.
He does.
He starts his own bricklaying.
I don't know how that works out. Totally. But
I will say about like Paul and some of them are some of them are like a little more boring than others.
Paul is one of
them. But you still really care about him. Like, I still am like, oh, I want to see what's going on with Paul, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, he and his wife clearly love each other, and they're just like, they're not as flamboyant as Tony, like, or even like as like interesting and distinct as like John or whatever.
Yeah.
But they're so, there's some where you just really care. Like, there's one of them, I forget, I think it's Suzanne is her name. She's one of the three.
Oh, yeah, Sue. Yeah.
The tall, Sue, that's it. Sue.
The babely one.
The babely one.
That she's babelier. Yeah. She's a babelist at 40.
She develops fast. Yeah. So, by the end, I mean, she's always nice, but by, that's what you missed. Man, 35.
I gotta go back. I'll go back.
Go back and watch her at 35. Uh-huh. She's singing at this
karaoke thing.
And it's just a great, so the way it's shot, I mean, it's, and this, her hair and the period and the way she's singing until this guy she likes or something like that.
Yeah.
It's great. And her, I just, by the end of it, she's one of the, by the most recent one, she's one of the standouts in the most recent one. You're like, wow, she's so cool. Mm-hmm. You know?
The 35 one would put us, what, in the early 90s?
Yeah, that is like,
I think it's late 80s.
Late 80s.
Right.
Okay.
Okay. Yeah, yeah. No, 92.
86. No, is it 92?
92.
They're 35 at 92?
Because 42 is 1999. Oh, or those are the release dates, so they shot it in 98. But yeah, 35 would have been 7 years earlier, 92.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
So that's, those are some good karaoke times.
Yeah.
92.
British karaoke.
Yeah, you can't beat
it. And then there's the other one who was also a real cute little girl.
She's the librarian.
Librarian, you know. Oh my God, what have I done?
Is it Lynn?
Lynn.
Is that her name? Yeah.
She's a hard worker. She's a hard ass.
Yeah.
She's a no bullshit hard ass.
Yeah.
By the end, you know, I guess she's kind of, you see her struggles or whatever. Oh, she's the one, she doesn't.
She's got a weird medical thing that comes up later. Yeah.
When she was maybe maybe she does, maybe she doesn't.
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah, you know.
I gotta remember where to stop.
Yeah. And there's another one. Jackie has some medical issues at certain points.
I think you mentioned something before we were on mic about how like 35 is a hard one because so many people's like parents are passing.
Yeah, and they're just relatable. They're all crying. Yeah. Almost everyone is crying. If they're not crying about their parents passed, they're crying about something.
Divorce, something
not working out, mm-hmm. they're not achieving their dreams. What's the name of the guy? He's black. What's the one black
Simon.
Guy?
Simon.
Simon. He's another one who his life is really interesting.
Yeah.
Because he like when he's
he takes a year off, right?
He takes a year off. Mm-hmm. But also like He didn't know his dad at all. Yeah, I didn't know my dad, and he's like, he's such a sweet little kid, and he just seems kind of lost, you know. And then there's a certain point where
he has a fro when he's 21.
Yeah, he's got a cool
fro. Sweet fro. Yeah,
but he's talking about like, you know, oh, I want to do this, I don't want to work at this, and then they come back, and he's still working there.
Yeah,
yeah.
But then his life. I mean, he takes it. His life kind of seems good. He kind of takes interesting twists and turns. And like, you know, he's got a ton of kids.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, he's like very old man.
Yeah, five with one and his first wife.
And then his second wife. But like, by the time they get to the second wife, it seems like, oh, he seems like he's in a good place.
Yeah.
That's 35, I guess.
I think 42 is where I saw him in it. So I think he took 35 off maybe. But at 28, he has an intense accent, which is very different from how he grew up.
Oh, yeah, he saw a lot. He saw a lot, this man.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He totally does an accent
shift. Oh, you think you're so fit, don't you?
Yeah. I've only seen up to 42 with him. So I kind of skipped through bits of 56.
Oh, yeah. So, go back and watch 56. I actually think my favorites of the series are probably 56... Well, my favorites of the series are probably the first one
because
it's just cool, you know, and then 21 because it's like you just saw, you're like, oh, it's so fun to see what this little kid looks like as an adult now.
Mm-hmm.
And also, they're more distinct now, so you know who they are.
Right, yeah.
You're like, oh, I want to see what's going on with that one guy.
Right.
Seven, you don't know who any of them are, so you're like, well, who's who and who's going
to
come back?
Paul and Neil were interchangeable to me in the beginning. Like, Paul, Neil, and the guy who went away and comes back that we were talking about.
Paul's the Aussie, right?
Yeah. I mean, because
Paul
at 21,
if you had showed Paul and then said he's going to grow up to be Neil, it might be like, oh.
Because
he's like the, and they shoot it with this weird grainy film stock, you know?
Right, yeah.
At 14.
Yeah.
Because I don't know, maybe they had to send another crew out to interview.
Oh, because he was in Australia. That's right. Yeah, that's why.
So, they can only get that grainy Australian.
Yeah.
But at 56, I think might be my favorites.
Right.
If you make it all the way through of them, 56, I think, is my favorite. But were we talking about 35? Oh yeah, yeah. We were saying 35. They're all crying and stuff like that.
That makes sense.
For me personally, and George and I were talking this before we started recording, we both are young looking for how old we are, you know? And people are always like, how old are you? Oh, you look so young. You look so young. Like, I'm 34. And, you know, people are always like, oh, you look like you're in your 20s. So they treat me like I'm in my 20s. They treat me like I'm younger. So I think I just act like that, you know? And it is strange, like, if I meet someone who's my age or someone who's maybe just a couple years older, but they look, you know, they don't look my age or they look older than me, then I'm like, oh, shoot, I'm older than that guy or whatever.
Well, I guess that begs another question. Like, who do you identify the most with out of the show?
Of the at their time or at the character?
I guess as an overall arc, maybe.
Right.
Like, you pull for some of them, but, like, do you have that moment where, like, oh, I might be like Tony or I might be like... Or is it just multiple things?
I don't know that I have one that I'm like, that's me. You know, I mean, it's also like such a different culture. I think it's just more like, you know, it's like there's a quote from Nicholas later on in one of the films where he talks about, he says, you know, it's not my life story, but it's someone's or whatever. So it's almost like maybe they're not getting everything totally perfect, but this is what a life looks like.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? This is what different people's lives look like and like the struggles people go through. But what I was going to say about to make it about me was was just that, like, when I was watching them, my experience watching them was because I look young, people treat me like I'm young. And I watched them when I was like 30, I guess last year I watched them when I was 33 and or 34, I guess. And, I watched them and I was like, oh, well, I kind of look like these 21-year-olds. So I guess that's me. Well, here I am at 20. This is me. This is the one for me. And then I'm like, 21, they're so young and idealistic and dumb. You know, they don't know anything. And then 28, I'm like, well, this is probably, I'm more like the 28-year-olds because that's where I am. I'm not married. And then here they are. And I'm just getting my life started. That's why it's slower in America. And then I was like, oh, wait a second. God, 35, that's just like a year or two away. That's a, and then here, 35 is the next one, you know, and I guess I'm closer to 35. Fuck. So, you know, I guess I'm going to be crying like a baby in a year or so.
Yeah. I don't even want to say exactly my age, but let's just take it to, there's like something about, same thing with watching Boyhood. I had a similar experience with Boyhood.
Yeah. I actually think, I can't remember, I was so into, that's another thing, because I was talking about, I watched Breaking Bad, and that made me want to watch this. I think I started watching this, I was excited about Boyhood, it was coming out, and in anticipation of that, I watched all the Before and Sunrise Sunset movies, and that was really fun to watch a series that's every 5 years, you know, has a new, you know, like, it just updates, and they made one every 5 years or whatever, or 9 years, no, it was every 9 years they made it. They made it in 95, 04, and whatever 9 years is after that.
Yeah.
So that was cool to see, like, oh, you get to see these actors age, you know, and you get to see them progress. And I actually really like those Linklater movies, you know, and particularly the third one is kind of harrowing. And then I think I was excited about Boyhood, and then I really liked Boyhood. And I think it was after those, I was like, oh, I just watched all these binge watched Breaking Bad, and I can watch a series, and I really want to watch those Ups because I was so into Boyhood. So that was like another reason that I got into the Ups. And then I prefer them. I loved Boyhood, but I think that they're superior pieces of cinema.
Right.
Is there something in the Up series you wish they would have documented? Something they missed that you thought was something you would like to have seen? Their parents, maybe, or like...
I felt that way with the Seven, and like, because how important it becomes later on, it ends up being like, well, we don't have any footage of the parents.
I don't know. I don't know. I mean, I kind of like what it is. I don't. It's one of those things where it's like, you know, it to me, I've put it on a pedestal. Like, I walked away after watching them all so satisfied and like, just thinking like, I can't wait to see where they go, you know? And it's less about like, Well, I would have done it like this. Or, you know, yeah. I mean, like we were talking about, if you watch them too close together, the recaps can get exhausting. But it's like, it wasn't really meant to be watched like
right,
that.
Right, it wasn't meant to be like
so
that.
So if you just think of it like you watch them all with the recaps, as a film, I actually thought 28 Up was it's I think Roger Ebert considers it like one of the best films of all time.
Yeah.
That was kind of one of the harder ones to get through. It was like, it was long, mm-hmm. and it was a little boring at parts, 28 Up. But as a whole, the whole story of all these people's lives, I don't think that I thought like one, I thought it could have been better. I wanted to see them do other stuff. I'm fascinated by the make that this is a piece of, this is a film thing that exists, you know?
Yeah.
It's like, it's kind of unprecedented, you know, and there's been so many imitations, but like this is the one that stayed, you know, this is the one, you
right.
know.
I was just so impressed by the poise of the 7-year-olds and even the 14-year-olds and how well spoken they were, and the
right.
fact that they had political ideologies and thoughts.
Well, also, I mean, that's one where it's like you don't need to see the parents because you know what the parents
right.
are saying.
Yes.
You know,
I read the Financial Times.
Yeah, you know, and I'm going to call it court. And I'm going to Winchester. Yeah. I'm going, you know, they're all talking about the schools they're going to go to yeah. and stuff.
I'm going to be jockey. I'm going to be jockey. I'm going to be jockey. I love the horses. But I don't know if, it would seem weird to me in America if you could sit down 14, 15 middle schoolers and ask them of their political affiliations and have them answer.
Right. Well, they'd give you a copy of what they heard on the news, or they give
or
you a copy
parents.
Of what their parents said.
Yeah.
You know, that's what I would have done.
Or just do a follow up on Jesus Camp, like see what all those kids are now.
Yeah,
it'd be really interesting.
Or I'd like to see where the kids from that, remember that documentary Spellbound.
Oh yeah,
the Spelling Bee kids.
Yeah,
we'll just see where they are now.
Mm-hmm. Yes, that's a great documentary.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I feel the same way. I see it as more of like a museum piece where you go and you sit down and you say, this is what I'm supposed to be watching, and then I love
yeah.
it as a whole
yeah.
because it's so fascinating. And, it, you know, just like a lot of museum pieces, it's boring in parts. It's fascinating in
yeah.
other parts. But, I feel the same way. There wasn't too much where I sat down and be like, God, I wish they would ask him about this or that.
It just, yeah.
I mean,
if anything, I want to know where the girl who goes, you don't, I do, you know, where's she? Yeah.
I mean, it seems like it's so specifically British on one level, and then it's so super, like, just humanity at another level. I think it's like they were trying to pinpoint, like, what's England going to be like in the year 2000, and then it just ends up being about just life.
Of course.
Yeah, it starts yeah. off, yeah, it starts off with, like, here's where we aim for it to go, and what's the class, you know, the classes are changing, let's see the kids, and then it... Yeah, it becomes this other thing.
What was it like?
It becomes this thing about also their relationship with the filmmaker.
Yeah. Oh,
it's just really fascinating.
I wanted to point up another thing, which is going to be jumping ahead for you a little bit. But I like, for one thing, you've got, at first there was these two trios, right? There was a trio of girls, there's a trio of posh boys, and like that was an interesting dynamic that was set up. And then the boys kind of just fragment off, but the girls always kind of, they managed to keep them together.
Yeah.
They're all London girls.
That's cool.
Yeah, it's neat. And then also I was going to say... Oh, I forgot.
I wish they'd reunite yeah. Neil and
oh yeah, other dude.
Peter.
Yeah.
Peter.
The rock dude.
The rock dude and the homeless dude.
Yeah, of course they're friends.
Cuz they were friends. They were together the first two, you know.
Yeah.
I forgot the other part of this.
What were you saying? Oh, about the trio of people being together, or?
Yeah, I thought that was interesting, and then I forgot the second thing. But yeah.
Something about different people being together, or what was the kernel of
that? Oh yeah. Okay, so then there's a in 42. There is like, it sort of feels like there is a crossover episode. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Is it 42? Is
with
it...
Neil and Bruce crossover into each other's storylines?
Yes.
And then it's
yes.
all of a sudden it's like
that made me.
That
I
was
just started
like,
crying.
I was like, wait, what the hell just happened?
I started
happened?
Crying when that happened.
So for Paco, what happens is like Bruce, spoiler, gets married, and then they show the footage of him getting married. Then they cut to like, where is Crazy Neil? Like, what the hell is up with Crazy Neil? And then you see Crazy Neil.
Has
speaking he, at Bruce's wedding.
Yeah. Nice.
They became friends because of the show.
Yeah.
Because like they did reunion
because
thing for the show. And then Bruce, the nicest guy in the world, is just like, well, if you're homeless all the time, you could always come stay with me.
Yeah.
And then he takes him up on it like a crazy, like Kramer. He basically becomes like the Kramer to like, you know, like just the crazy neighbor who's
yeah.
just like, oh, you're out of butter. You know, like yeah. that's basically what Neil becomes.
And then And Bruce, that's weird. I didn't, and I never thought of it like that. But there is that scene where Bruce goes, you know, it can be difficult, like with anyone, or talking about Bruce and Neil. But yeah, that
he unplugged the fridge. It was too loud. It was too loud. I needed to turn it off
with David Arquette.
That is one that is like a total filmmaking like reveal.
Yeah, that was,
I think,
because
they'd already set up Bruce
right
in that episode. They'd already shown, here's what's going on with Bruce.
He's a little boring, but he's a nice guy.
Who had they set up first?
They set up, they'd shown Bruce already getting married.
Had they shown Neil first? Because they showed one person, and then they showed the next one, and then the reveal is, and pull out, look who we're with.
Yeah, because I'm like, wait, did he make a mistake? Why are we on Bruce all of a sudden? It's like, oh, we're still in the Neil segment.
Yeah.
And then it's like, oh, it was like, you know, a crossover episode. Right.
Yeah. Anytime they do that in the series, it for some reason becomes emotional for me.
Yeah.
I don't know why.
Oh, so that happens more than once?
It will happen again.
Yeah, nice. Because you're invested in it, because it's such a good documentary.
Yeah.
That's what
but also even
do.
Yeah. You care, I think it's just when those characters and these people that you don't expect to ever, you know what it is? Because it's like you're watching them all as one story. They have their own contained stories, and they don't involve each other, you know, unless they started out with each other. So when you see ones that, like, they do involve each other, it just becomes, it's so compelling. I don't know what that is.
Yeah, like, maybe those three girls wouldn't be friends still if not for this way that they've been kind of linked. I don't know. It's possible.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm sure, you know.
Well, they certainly bonded
together.
That's
another thing, too. At 21, they show them, the end of 21 up, they show everyone who's in them together and watching themselves.
Yeah.
And that was really cool to me, you know? Yeah. And you can see their body language and strange dynamics and stuff like that, and them talking to each other.
Yeah.
Having a proper cup of tea.
Yeah, proper cup of tea.
And that's like funny, because I think John says in that one, he's like, well, I come off like the bad guy, and he's talking to Tony. He's like, I think you came off better than I did. Like, they have that little moment.
Yeah.
Which I think is interesting.
Yeah, Tony does pretty well in this.
The first few movies, they always, and here's one thing I will say that I didn't like about some of the middle structures, and they kind of changed up a little bit toward the end. I like, okay, the first, I think, one, the first two, Seven Up and
Seven Plus Seven.
Seven Plus Seven, they jump around.
Yeah.
They jump around all through the whole movie. Yeah, you're getting someone's opinion on this. You're getting someone's opinion on this. You're getting someone's opinion on this. And then I think they do the same thing in 7 plus 7, the second one, 14 up. And then
religion, what do you think?
I think they don't do that in 21 up. I think they don't jump around.
Mm-hmm.
And then in 28 up, it is pacing-wise rougher because it's so one person at a time.
Oh, yeah.
And I just think editing-wise, I think I would have preferred, I guess this can answer your question, I would have preferred they continue to jump around instead of, here's Tony, now here's Susie. Here's Andrew. Here's John.
Like, link it by subject rather than by person?
Yeah.
Okay,
you know, because then you just get, you get a little bit of someone. What does he think? What does he think? What does he have to say about it? What's going on in his life? Introduce him, then jump around. You know, like, I just, maybe that's, for me, a better way to edit it. Because, but it's just like, what if I like someone less than the other? Then I got to, like, sit through his, you know, or sit through hers. But if you're getting it, then, I don't know, it just becomes a way to make them all more endearing, perhaps. And it stays in that structure. And they always open with Tony because Tony's the crowd pleaser, you know?
Yeah.
They stop opening with Tony at a certain point, but there's a handful of them where they're like, you know, bum, 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 and they show the cool title sequence with the, you know, 21, 14, or 21, 14, 31, dun, 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 dun.
Yeah.
And then it's like, Tony.
Well, I mean, everyone has their favorite, right? I mean, you have to have your favorite. I have my.
I'm not a picker of things in general in life, so I don't pick favorites. But I do have things. Obviously, there's ones I want to know more about, and there's ones that I quote with my hardcore 7-Up friends.
Yeah,
we're walking around, we're going, "Mom, Dad, dogs, yeah."
The knowledge.
The knowledge.
Tony's wife. I love Tony's wife.
Yeah.
She's. They have a really funny dynamic. His wife, and then later in life, it's funny as well. You know. Oh, there's the one in 35. That's another thing you miss in 35, them talking about cheating.
Oh, they recap it in 42.
Right. Yeah. That's a good scene where she's just like,
"Well, I got caught, didn't I? I got caught.
I got caught in a, you know, I got caught, you know." He goes, "Life, what does he say, like in 28 or something? He goes, "Life is to be lived." And then there's a part.
Do what thou wilt. That's the whole, should be the whole of the law, right? That's what, that's Anton LaVey, right?
Yeah. Do you think they get more ideological as they get older or less?
Well, that's why I want to see more from John. He was the one that seemed the most like political minded. I mean, I guess Neil ends up being the most political in a literal sense. Like he is elected.
He starts getting into being elected officials.
I feel like my neighbor is just like Neil, and I feel like I know a bunch of Neils. I feel like the Berkeley has a lot of Neils, like just smart people that are just like, I was too smart for this job.
Yeah.
You know, like there's just something that structurally they can't fit into the fabric. And then unless they're doing something like, oh, I now am a politician. Like, it's like I found a use for my specific kind of mania. Yeah,
absolutely.
But the way he's just like shaking when he's homeless and just like fucking nodding in 28, it's
known
so
to have behavior
dark.
That may be erratic.
Yeah, I just start feeling
to other, or may appear erratic to others or something like that.
I guess a lot is coming about my feeling because, like, I just like I either am worried that I've been that guy or that I know a lot of those guys.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I agree. I mean, this one, if for those people who are listening to this and have not seen this series, should definitely watch it. Give them a week apart.
Yeah,
don't try to binge watch.
Definitely take a week apart between those first few.
Yeah,
and then I think when you get into the 40s. You could probably binge the. You could definitely do the last two back to back. 49 and 56, I think, could go back to back.
You mean watch them back to back?
I think
so. Those are hour long.
No, they're both feature length. But if you're into them that hard, like I think I did them back to back. I think when I did 49, I couldn't wait to get to 56.
So you say you skip one, you say skip 28. Is that what you're saying?
I wouldn't say skip it. I would say take a break between 21 and 28, and 28 and 35.
Yeah.
And when you get to 28. Skip the beginning where
of course,
if you watch it on Netflix, skip the beginning because they just show you 7 Up again.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And it's almost like the film is saying skip 7 Up and 21. Or the film is saying skip 14 Up and 21 Up.
Yeah.
Here, just start with
28 Up. That's weird. If you watch, that's what I was going to, that was my note on Netflix. I would say if you just kind of pop in at 28, you get a recap of everything.
Yeah, but
in a basic way.
I think it's less satisfying. I think. If you love movies and you just like watching movies and want a good thing to watch, watch it as each it's one presented. As their own thing.
But space it out.
Yes.
For sure.
Space it
out.
I would
agree. I watched 7, 14, and 21 back to back to back yesterday in a few hours.
You watched 7, 14, and 21?
Yeah.
Did you feel it was... Well, because it's only you're only doing 21, it wasn't clouded with recaps, huh?
No.
So did you find that very satisfying?
I did.
Yeah, 21 I think might be one of my favorites because it's like you just it's sad. Oh, sorry, what were you going to say?
No, I was going to say that I didn't really need the big break, the week break in it because the first one's 30 minutes, the second one's like an hour, the second one's like 90 minutes. But like after the first one, I was like, okay, I really want to see these guys as teenagers. And then I was like, well, that one was kind of weird because they're all soft spoken and lots of
people. They're all shy,
and lots of acne and shyness. Yeah. And then I was like, well, now I really want to see them as 21
years
old. So,
well, it's fascinating because you just really, that teenage stuff just sets up so hard. That's what you think about at the end of it, where you just sets up so hard, like what's going on in their lives. But what I think is satisfying about watching those first three is just like, later on it becomes about who they are. And that's very satisfying to see where they've become and what's going on in their life and their hardships and that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. And then even further on, it becomes satisfying to hear their opinions about how the films that you've just sat through affect their lives.
Oh,
and then it becomes about the filmmaking and of their relationship with Michael Apted.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's satisfying. But those first three, when those aren't factors, it's just satisfying to watch them grow up.
Right.
Like, it's just cool to see someone, I just saw that person at 7, this is what they look like now.
Yeah.
Wow, same person. Whoa, that person aged. Whoa, that person's a stud or whatever, you know?
And that is a boyhood age, too. It's that really interesting. Like,
that's one of the appeals of boyhood, you know?
So we're going to come to a close here, Josh, but one question I've asked all the people we've talked to is what is one of your favorite documentaries and or what is your gateway documentary? What's the documentary you saw the first time that got you into loving documentaries?
Gosh, I don't know that I have that question. I mean, I answer the I mean, you asked me if I, you know, what if I knew of some ones that I wanted to talk about, and I think this was the first one that I suggested, you know?
Yeah.
So this, and I only watched, and this is, these are ones I'd known about and been meaning to watch for years, but now that I've watched the whole series, it kind of exists as one thing, and, you know, I don't know why I'm drawing a blank on some of the best ones.
Not necessarily.
Well, you like the true crime stuff. We already kind
of I binged a lot of true crime documentaries, mm-hmm. you know, last year. I couldn't get enough. But
they are fascinating.
Favorites. I'm sure I'll think of the answer when I get back to LA.
Okay. Email us.
Yeah.
Or we'll bring it up in episode 2.
Yeah. We'll bring it. See, this one isn't done yet.
Yeah. It's a serial.
Yeah. So we're going to finish, because we'll finish this one. We'll talk about which ones are we basically talked about 7 through 28.
Yeah.
Here.
Yeah.
And some of 35.
We'll start with 35.
Yeah. So maybe we'll do 35 to 56.
And we'll meet back here. 2022.
Maybe we'll do it in 7 weeks.
Okay, or 7 weeks.
Maybe
from
we
now.
Can get Michael Apted to do a phone in.
I'm sure that he would love to.
He's got
to
have an intern lined up for, I don't know. I mean, he's getting up there too.
One thing I was going to wonder, like, what happens when he, because he's older than all of them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know?
He's got to have a reason.
Does he have a backup? Yeah. Is he going to have a filmmaker? Or and how many of them are going to say, no, Michael, no me? You know?
Right.
I don't know you. Another thing that he's talked about in interviews is he has interacted with a lot of them in their lives. He's friends with a lot of them, you know?
He's had sex with...
Maybe.
Neil.
I was going to say Sue, but all right, we all have our preferences. Yeah.
All right, so...
Best documentaries. Gosh, I'm drawing a blank.
Or just one you would recommend, I guess,
well,
to
one
us.
That I recommend. Some filmmakers I like, recent ones. I like that filmmaker, Andy Timoner.
Oh right, the Dandy War. I mean, I
she
called the Dandy
dig,
War.
She made the dig one,
the Brian Jonestown Massacre.
Right? Yeah, she made that, but she also made We Live in Public, and one other one that was like We Live in Public is terrifying. Check that one out.
Don't know that one at all.
That one is about it's documents this guy from the this like computer genius who made a ton of money in the dot-com boom, and then instead of taking his money and just buying an island, he went and like. Wanted to be an artist and tried to create this like art collective thing. It was in the 90s and like basically predicted how we're going to behave now. And you know, and how that people psychologically want to showcase themselves but want to be isolated, but it makes them depressed. And he did it with this weird art project, and he and his girlfriend online. He was one of the first people to put his girlfriend online, and he puts them online living together, and then they start to freak out by being online too much. They get too into it, and he like hits her, and then you know he loses his temper, and he does this like, and it's also just cool to see this like 95, 96 New York art scene that they think they're doing this weird performance art thing where they're all living in this building in a bubble, and there's cameras in every room, and they're like, you know, they just start fucking and showering and stuff like that, and but it predicts the psychology of it all.
Right,
that's what's so fat, and it's terrifying because it's like you just can't escape it, and that would be a good double feature with the Citizen Four.
Oh, nice.
Actually, like if you, I thought Citizen Four, I didn't love it. I'll be honest. I watched. I was like, it's a little slow for me. Yeah. It's just him talking in a room the whole time.
All right. So we
anyway,
gotta,
too much. Too
no,
much.
No, that's fine.
I could go on tangent. Now that I got myself talking about movies, I'm like, this is a good one. This is a good one.
Yeah.
And but I'll come back and we'll finish
episode 3. Then.
We'll finish it more.
Josh Fadem, thank you so much.
Thanks for having
me. Josh.
Thanks so much to Josh Fadem for coming into the show. You can follow him on Twitter at Josh Fadem.
And if you like this podcast, please like it and review it on iTunes.
Our theme music is by David Siegel.
And you can follow us on Twitter at SupDocPodcast.
And our website is supdocpodcast.com. Thanks so much.
Bye.